This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Do you believe in God? The latest numbers from the Pew Research Center show that fewer and fewer Americans are answering yes to that question, and millennials are much less likely than older Americans to belong to any religious faith. Despite these trends, my guest today argues that science shows religious belief is good for our physical and mental health. Harold Koenig is co-founder and director of the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health at Duke Medical Center. He spent the past 30 years looking at the connection between religion, spirituality, and health. Dr. Koenig is keynote speaker at the inaugural Spirited Talks. It's an event tomorrow night sponsored by the nonprofit Johnson Service Corps that examines how faith and spirituality influence today's leaders. Dr. Koenig, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
You have been studying this topic for quite some time, and the road, the journey that you took is kind of long and windy. Tell me how you got looking into this stuff in the first place.
Well, you know, it kind of came from several different directions. One was my own struggles with life, so to speak. And around the same time, I was seeing patients as part of my family medicine fellowship. So I was going rounding on patients and asking them how they were coping with their condition. I had been a nurse, and you know, nurses are a little bit more sensitive to that than doctors. So when I went into medicine, I continued that trend to ask patients, particularly those who were older, they were hospitalized with hip fractures or stroke or heart attack. And it seemed to me that these older individuals would know, you know, the things that work in life in helping them to cope after years of living and then having to go through all of these health problems. And here I was at kind of the start of my life, and I was going through, you know, various things.
Well, I was
going
to say, you had a bit of a journey before you got into medicine, right?
Well, it was a bit of a journey, kind of in the middle while I was in medicine.
Yeah.
But that journey started, you know, way back. But I was raised in a religious home,
yeah.
And then, you know, then I kind of drifted away from it, right. And you know, focused more on college and trying to do well. And you know, then I went to medical school, and I was in the middle of medical school, and then things kind of the journey took another turn.
Mm-hmm.
When the dean asked me into his office and said, you know, Mr. Koenig, I think you better take a break.
I see. It's nice to have that personal attention.
Yeah, so from the dean. Absolutely.
From the dean. I mean, not everybody gets that. So you were off on your own. So you've been thoughtful about some of the stuff, went back, became a nurse, as you say, much more hands-on and much more attuned to the actual condition of patients and not so much on the chart. When you began to notice these things or ask these questions, look, you've lived a long life. You must have some skills. I mean, obviously, there are some patients who are not very skillful. They're in terrible agony, and they're not coping well, and they're not. So you're noticing the difference, I guess. Was that part of it?
That was part of it.
Some do it well, and some just are not doing it well.
Well, I just noticed that the frequency that many of these individuals talked about their religious faith, and you know, I had drifted away from it, and I was thinking, well, you know, it seems like I'm getting a very consistent message that this seems to be helping people, and right now I need some help. Maybe I ought to reconsider this. So I thought, though, you know, in training they tell you that religion is neurotic and, of course, you know, is not good for you. You know, you'd be better off if you didn't have it. It's a crutch, you know, and all the bad things that happen in the world, all of those reasons why one shouldn't be religious. And so I thought, well, why don't we just study this? You know, in medical school, we learned things by doing research, by doing objective research where we just observed how people, you know, we measured various things quantitatively,
right.
You know, by numbers. And then we looked at the correlation with various outcomes, mental health, physical health. There are all sorts of scales out there. So I thought, well, why couldn't I just make up this scale here, measuring a person's religious involvement and see if it correlates with anything.
Well, first of all, how do you do that? Because it is subjective, right? The idea of religious, I suppose, practice. If I attend a service once a week, that's something measurable. But well, how else do you measure religious belief?
Well, you know, attendance at religious services is one way, and it's a common way. And you know, people will say, you know, how often do you attend? Never, up to more than once a week. Mm-hmm. You can measure, you know, how important is prayer to you? You know, how frequently do you pray or meditate? How often do you read religious scriptures? What is kind of the object of your ultimate concern in life? And there are scales to kind of measure that, particularly with regard to religion. That's how we've measured it and then looked at the outcomes, really both the behaviors and the beliefs and the sincerity of belief.
So what are the outcomes? What are you finding?
Well, the first outcome was when I set this, this is at least 30 years ago, when I set this little survey out to older adults and asked them, you know, how often they pray, went to church and all those things, and their level of satisfaction and their level of anxiety about death and dying. I figured, you know, they were getting close to it, so, you know, mm-hmm. there might be some of that around. And I didn't know whether religion protected or made it worse. You know, it could have been either. So I sent that out and collected the questionnaires back and did the analysis. And lo and behold, those who are more religious are less worried about death and they have greater life satisfaction. And it was significant. It was statistically significant. So that was the first one. And then it kind of gradually, I went from there to looking at larger samples, assessing well-being, measure more aspects of religious involvement than before, multi-item scales, again, correlating them with mental health. And I came to Duke and started to look at depression in the medically ill, and began seeing that, you know, those who are more religious were not as depressed.
So that's what I wanted to know, because that first survey is really self-reporting, and it's not insignificant. If I feel like I'm happier and would tell you I'm happier, well, then I'm happy. But what about other outcomes, objective outcomes, the length of a stay in the hospital, the severity of a mental illness, that sort of thing?
Yeah, actually, you know, we actually did those studies too, including, you know, length of stay in the hospital, and we found here at Duke, and we found that those who are more religious aren't in the hospital as long. And we looked at mortality. The mortality studies are probably the most remarkable ones. We had a large random sample, 4,000 older adults, followed for over 6 years. And, you know, those who are attending religious services, who are praying, are just living longer, significantly longer. What's kind of exciting is that those studies were back in the late 1990s, and now literally yesterday it came out in the Washington Post, actually in JAMA Internal Medicine, that the people at Harvard School of Public mm-hmm. Health are reporting that among women, among a sample of 80,000 women followed for over 15 years, that their likelihood of dying during that follow-up is a third less, independent of social factors, depression, everything, independent of all of those factors.
And I know that you collaborate with scholars around the world, so how does this interpretation, or does it vary, depending on where you are on the globe?
Well, you know, I've done some research, you know, in China and more of it in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia, Iran. Because there's a lot of interest, you know, in those places, not so much in China, but in Western China, where a third of the population is Muslim, there is quite a bit of interest in these connections with health. In the Middle East, the findings are very robust. I mean, they're more robust, that they're stronger than they did, at least with regard to mental health outcomes. There haven't been a lot of physical health outcomes that have been studied in the Middle East yet, although that's on the horizon. But the mental health outcomes are pretty remarkable across the board, including just reciting the Quran in Arabic among all different populations.
And so does it vary from religion to religion?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. It's kind of hard to compare religions in this mm-hmm. regard, because each religion really comes out of, you know, its own location, geographical location. And if you're a minority religion, you're not going to be doing as well just because you're a minority. So right. You have to compare them in their original countries, like like Hindus in India, Muslims in Saudi, and then, you know, Christians in America, you have, which those studies are very complex to do. But it looks like sincerity of religious commitment, at least among in the monotheistic traditions of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, that seems to be a key factor. The surrender of life to the divine seems to be key in all those religions.
So how do you separate this? To what extent do you think this is correlation? To what extent does that individual who is likely to practice a religion, they may be more genetically robust? I mean, it's not... You see my question. The question is sort of which came first here. What's the cause and what's the effect?
No,
do we know?
That's absolutely a very good point, because, you know, we've actually found in our studies, genetic studies, that there seem to be some genetic predisposition to religious and spiritual, you know, experiences. So that it could be both directions. You know, it's hard to, you know, the only way to sort that out would be to randomize people, you know, do a randomized clinical trial to religion or not, you know, because then the genetic factors would equalize out and you could actually look and see whether, but it's tough to make people religious, you know, on command.
Well, it depends, depends on where you live. So talk about this. What do you think is going on?
Well, I think what's happening is that devout religious belief expresses itself in three ways. One way is that it involves powerful beliefs that give meaning to life circumstances, especially those bad circumstances that are kind of coming at us all the time. Gives it meaning, gives it purpose, gives an individual's life meaning and purpose. And depending, you know, pretty much most of the religions, you know, believe that at least the monotheistic religions believe that there is a loving God. And that sense that one is loved by the divine, all of those are cognition, you know, those are beliefs, those are cognitive processes that seem to give this sense of self-esteem, this sense of ability to cope, assist with lowering anxiety and stress levels. So that's one piece of the pie. One piece of the pie is the belief system and the commitment to that belief system. Now, being committed to the belief system, one would hope that one would follow some of those those beliefs, and so behavior would change. And so we find that religious people tend to smoke less, they drink less, they're more likely to exercise. I mean, it's funny how they're just more they behave better, you know, less likely to do stuff that gets them thrown in jail or whatever, lose their job. They're you know, they're responsible and all of those things, and it keeps your job and they emphasize the, you know, most religions emphasize these traits like, you know, forgiveness and love your neighbor, and that all of those things are good for you.
But I wonder, and again, this might be tricky to test for, but we know in our own experience in terms of the spectrum of Christianity, and that we see a wide variety of political beliefs, those who believe more in a loving God and those who are quite vindictive. There are fundamentalist strains of fundamentalist Christians that are extraordinarily bigoted and violent, as extreme Islam, radical Islam. There are strains of that that are also that way. Is there anything along that spectrum that changes the outcome if I'm a radical Muslim or a radical a fundamentalist Christian who believes in war and bigotry? Does that change my outcome? And am I any different than the Christian on the other side who has a more loving understanding of their religion?
Well, there is a little evidence that would suggest that images of God do seem to correlate with health outcomes. Now, the question you ask is very hard to study. One reason being is because people self-select into these various groups. And so if you have somebody that just likes to view the world black and white, they would be very content in a fundamentalist tradition, and they may have very good mental health because things are black and white. And, you know, if you abide by the belief system, you're in good shape.
A lot less anxiety if there's just two of everything, right?
That's very true, you know. And so those of us who, you know, want to, you know, think it through and try to understand the complexity of it all, That can be a bit anxiety provoking at times, like you said, Frank.
So what are you working on next? What's the next study for you?
Well, we're really interested in in looking at the biological variables that religious involvement affect. We've done some studies looking at telomere length, which is a part of the telomeres are the ends of the chromosome that shorten progressively as people get older. And we think that religious involvement may actually reduce the inflammation that is responsible for the shortening of the telomeres, resulting perhaps explain why religious people live longer. So that's one of the streams. But also really interested in studying what role that faith plays in helping veterans and active duty military cope with PTSD. And we're developing a spiritually oriented version of the standard treatment for PTSD to target moral injury. We think that veterans and soldiers who have been having to kill or experience their buddies killed, and you know that just evokes tremendous emotion. And part of it has, you know, part of it has to do with there's some, you know, this moral aspect of it that seems to generate and maintain the PTSD symptoms. And we think if we can address that moral injury through a very kind and a compassionate way, you are my beloved, basically, approach. We think that it can help to treat the PTSD, which is notoriously known for being very hard to treat. I mean, only 20% of people really go into remission. So that's our next wave.
Dr. Harold Koenig is co-founder and director of the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health at Duke Medical Center. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you, Frank.
Dr. Koenig is the keynote speaker at the inaugural Spirited Talks, an event examining how spirituality influences today's leaders. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Charlie Sheldon Orman. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.